Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A man finally kills himself after failing 10 times. A motorcyclist is accused of driving 127 miles per hour. And we have more about Representative Anthony Weiner.
Excellent. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, June 7th, 2011. A Duarte, California man tried to kill himself on at least 10 occasions previously, finally succeeded Friday after jumping to his death from a freeway overpass.
Well done.
Deputies say 41-year-old Francisco Solomon Sanchez of Duarte died after plunging into rush hour traffic from a 210 freeway overpass between Mountain Avenue and Buena Vista Street. He was struck by at least one vehicle after his fall. The L.A. County coroner ruled his death a suicide. According to the Pasadena Star newspaper, Sanchez has jumped or threatened to jump from freeway overpasses and other high places more than 10 times in recent years. In one incident at the same overpass in 2003, Sanchez broke both of his ankles and as a result was given 2 prosthetic legs. According to the Star, Sanchez was held for psychiatric evaluations many times after previous suicide attempts. In April, another man jumped from that same overpass. In May of 2010, yet another man threatened to throw himself off an overpass in Azusa. The 210 freeway is apparently a very popular place for suicides. And in November of 2008, a suicide caused a second death in the form of a traffic collision.
I don't think we should count threats. I mean, really, honestly.
No.
How often do I threaten to kill everybody around me? Always. How often do I do it? Almost never. So really, I mean, unless you're throwing yourself off, and much less on 2 prosthetic legs, by the way. So well done there, because that shows, you know what it is? That's devotion of purpose is what that is. That is playing it all the way through to the end of the line.
Yeah, that was 2003, so I'm just wondering, you know, how long it took him to learn how to climb over the fence.
Well, you can't do this sort of thing in braces. It's crawl, then walk, then jump.
A motorcyclist was arrested Friday after police said they caught him speeding 127 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone along Highway 20 east of Lebanon, Oregon. Lance Hawken, 40, of Sweet Home, also tried to elude Oregon State Police. OSP Lieutenant Mark Cotter said the man's attempt to flee ended after shredding his rear tire on his motorcycle caused him to drive into a ditch where he was arrested. Hawken was transported to Linn County Jail on several charges, including speeding, felony attempt to elude, reckless driving, and recklessly endangering another person. He had been operating a black 2005 Ducati motorcycle.
Yes, excellent.
It was seized by police.
That's the speeder's vehicle of choice is what that is, Don. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday. Is it possible that it's only Tuesday? Apparently so. It is Tuesday, June 7th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to get this program later on the day, you can do so via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. That's if you are opting to not get it from your iCloud, which is not going to be a thing I say every day just to annoy Robert Wagner.
iCloud?
Yes.
Does he not like the word iCloud?
I was just following. Well, it was as with Seamus. You know, Seamus doing this from the, you know, from, he was like giving me the updates on like the Electronic Arts and the Microsoft stuff yesterday at E3. And Wagner was sort of, you know, Twittering his reactions to Jobs' unveiling of a lot of stuff. Some of it new, some of it rejiggered, some of it just the same crap with a different name. Because the iCloud, I don't want to get off into a thing because this is, you know, this is a show where we try to be more streamlined and focused about everything.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that the iCloud doesn't appear to really do anything that, you know, just having some storage somewhere in like an FTP footlocker doesn't already do, except that it streamlines the process, which they already did like 3 years ago when they launched it as Mobile Me or whatever the hell that thing is. So, I mean, I'm not saying there's not a purpose for it. I'm saying, let's not you and I go, you know, creating something new that covers your foot and laces and calling it, you know, a Zinkelman, when it's really just a shoe.
Oh, yeah. But it's from Apple.
Well,
and,
so it's going to be,
and it's called an iCloud.
It is. Well, what that does mean, here's the real difference there. The difference between the iCloud and MobileMe, and the difference between MobileMe and everything else, it will have a button that is so bright and shiny you want to put it in your mouth and suck it like a sweet, sweet candy.
I wonder, I was talking to my pensman about this last night, and I wonder just exactly how many trademarks and patents on how many different fill-in-the-blank names Apple, like, just sort of, what, how many they trademark probably every day just on spec? Somewhere down the line, you know.
Somebody should write an article about that. Well, the thing is, you can't actually trademark something on spec. That is, trademarking is not a thing. You can't
copyright a name, though.
You can copyright something. You can't trademark something on spec.
Right.
You can patent, not even necessarily on spec. You can patent, but you still have to have schematics and blueprints. You have the diagrams showing how it can be done. Trademark actually has to be in use.
Okay.
So what they would probably be doing is they would be having a service mark, which is similar to but different than.
But you can copyright a name, can't you?
Well, certain things. You can't copyright the names of songs, for example.
Right. But, I mean, if Apple just said iCloud, iStereo,
no,
iBox.
Because the copyright isn't what you want there. A copyright is for a creative work or composition.
Ah.
But even those are not things you can copyright. So, like, I could write a song called Stairway to Heaven. Hmm. What you're talking about is a trademark, which is the use of that thing in commerce as opposed to the existence of the thing itself as a creative work.
But you would already have to have a thing to trademark.
Yes. Yeah,
thing.
Copyright has, well, you have to have a thing always. It's just a question of whether or not it's a hovercraft, which you can trademark without actually having built, or patent without actually having built, as long as you have the blueprints for it. Everything else kind of has to exist or be in the process of being existed. You can copyright a part. This is the most unbelievably uninteresting topic probably to anybody.
Yeah.
You can copyright a partially completed work, a work in progress, a record that you're writing, a novel that's halfway done. You can copyright those things, and then you need to update it later on with the whole or derivative work. Thus endeth the lesson. You're listening to Legion of News here at Ked. The point is that Wagner was right to note that the iCloud is just MobileMe, and MobileMe is like the same. Here's a little history lesson for you, you small fry out there. As Rush would say, you young skulls full of mush. So iCloud is MobileMe, but MobileMe is really MySpace. And when I say MySpace, I don't mean MySpace as it exists now or existed a few years ago. I mean MySpace.com as it first existed like 12 years ago when it was just an online storage facility. All it was just a big hard drive that existed out, you know, in the cyber way space thing where you could just stick all your crap. So all your purloined...
Which we didn't call the cloud yet.
No. All your purloined MP3s that Sean Fanning allowed you to have, you would just stick in a folder on MySpace.com, which is where you place, and that's all it was. They just did online storage. But then, of course, storage itself became so cheap that there was no upside in that. There's no percentage in that, as they say. And so they got out of the business, and then they turned it into this, you know, to the Facebook or to the MySpace as we now know it.
But then you get a guy like Ryan White who comes along and puts everything on his 2-terabyte hard drive, which then is stolen because he's put a handle on everything. That, along with the fact that people are now using mobile devices like iPads, which don't have a lot of storage, relatively speaking, we thus have rediscovered the idea of putting everything in a storage locker somewhere, except now, ba-da-da-ba-ba-ba, iCloud.
Yes.
Let me see if I can just... There we go. Awesome. There you go.
And knowing... Just half the battle. A pair of hikers who disappeared during an extreme outdoor competition near Antelope in eastern Oregon were found safe after a major search effort. The Bulletin in Bend reports that 23-year-old Ryan Johnstone of Portland and 32-year-old Luis Tribom of Milwaukee were participating in a GPS geocaching event near Antelope on Saturday. When the pair failed to check in on the event's required check-in time and could not be found, camp staff notified the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office that the hikers were missing. The pair were found Sunday near the John Day River by an aircraft assisting in the search and rescue efforts. The two were not injured and were escorted back to Washington Family Camp. KTVZ in Bend reported that the pair were participating in the Wild Canyon Games, which combines running, swimming, biking, geocaching, climbing, zip lining, and other sports into a team challenge.
And it's called what?
It's called the Wild Canyon Games.
Okay. And where did it take place?
Antelope, California, right. Oregon.
I was going to make a...
It's out by Bend somewhere, I guess.
I was going to opine something in the form of a glib witticism here, but I bit my tongue just now as I was chewing an ice cube.
It's hard to be glib when you're biting your tongue.
When you're bleeding.
Yes.
That's true, because blah, 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 blah. See, and then it seems like I should do some Ventura thing there, but no. And yes, so if I didn't make this distinction. So, yeah, so iCloud is mobile me. So if you currently have... And by the way, when I say mobile me, I mean mobile like Rick Emerson, because that's some crap that I was suckered into paying for.
Well, that's where our photos go when we upload photos to the
thing. Yeah, so they're just rebranding that and just, I don't know, adding more, schlepping more nonsense onto it. By the way, apparently at the Sony after party last night, there was Jane's Addiction and lots of strippers. Yeah.
Ooh.
There you go. Kids, that's why you want to start a company in your garage. Learn to code. It's all ones and zeros and whores. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also Science on the March. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program featuring...
Oh!
Looking at the whiteboard.
Oh, sorry. I knew I forgot something from yesterday. Got a Taser Watch, got a Geek Watch. Taser Watch, Geek Watch.
All right, Taser Watch, Geek Watch coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. That is RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Representative Anthony Weiner has not resigned yet, I guess, as of this moment, although everyone was thinking that he might yesterday, when instead he just had his long, rambling press conference that just went
awesome on
and on.
It was so great.
And on.
I wish it was still going now so we could listen to it again.
And with that guy in the back going, are you going to support Schwarzenegger's love child?
That was, okay, so I thought that I just sort of assumed that that's always Andrew Breitbart, but apparently no, that is, Breitbart is the guy who, I think Stewart is one who said this, that he Kanye'd the podium for like half an hour before. And the guy in the background apparently is whoever they got on the Stern Show to replace Stuttering John.
Oh, okay.
Because they no longer have John Melendez to go and ask James Brown if it hurts his testicles when he does the splits.
Yeah.
So now they just get the... By the way, and this is... I mean, not that everybody doesn't do this, but that is even for Stern a little bit of recycling, because... When Jennifer Flowers did her whole press conference about Bill Clinton back when Clinton was running in 92, Stuttering John, if you watch the press conference of Jennifer Flowers, they're just sitting there just looking like every chick who's ever done your nails, up in 82nd. When she's sitting there talking about having a relationship with Bill Clinton, you hear a guy in the background say, did Governor Clinton wear a condom? And that's Stuttering John. And that was considered like a really unbelievably outrageous thing for him to ask at the time. That was considered so like far beyond the pale. And then yesterday, like, the guy from the Stern Show was going, were you fully erect? Which is so... I love this country. I love everything about it.
I can't remember. I think I retweeted it. Somebody on Twitter quoting that thing. And then, who let Helen Thomas in here? So, the right-wing blogger who was the first to post bare-chested photos of Congressman Anthony Weiner says he's not the bad guy in the story. Andrew Breitbart says he held back a very graphic shot of Weiner to spare him and his family.
Is this one...
Yes.
I am not the cruel person that the media and certain people on the left think that I am. And I guarantee you that is a newsworthy photo.
Andrew Breitbart's just a big fuzzy bunny.
No, that's true.
Breitbart says he wasn't expecting Weiner to own up to the pictures when he witnessed Monday's news conference.
I ended up becoming you know, just like everybody else, witness to something that felt tragic and sad at an unbelievable level.
Okay, this guy sounds like Brian Posehn looks. The first time I saw a picture of Brian Posehn, this is exactly the voice that I thought would come out of that guy.
I ended up becoming, you know, just like everybody else, witness to something.
I'm going to go to the deli after lunch if anybody wants something.
Andrew Breitbart was asked if he considered Wiener's confession to be a vindication.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Really?
I have a cavernous maw. My mouth is huge.
Former prosecutor Paul Kellen doesn't believe any laws were violated.
Unless you were deliberately targeting a child, in that case you might have a violation of law. It would be a child endangerment violation.
Okay, well, there you go. Yeah. So there's that guy. Don't worry, we got four more of those that we'll have next hour.
Yes.
We could just run, we can run sound bites from that guy and about the story, like, forever, and I wouldn't care.
It's not just me, is it? This is another one of those things that's just really, really ridiculous, right?
Well, in what sense?
I mean,
I don't care. If you're asking me if I care that he was showing his member or his or clothing over or a bulge where his member might be to people, don't care. Couldn't possibly care less.
Okay. All right. Because I just, you know, I was listening to NPR this morning, and I guess Nancy Pelosi is all peeved
because they're hoping to win that big election, and you know, and they don't want to be known as the penis mailing party. And I mean, you can understand why. If you're a party of penis tweeters, that does perhaps give your enemies something with which to distract the vast benign idiots, you know, the banal swath of morons who make up the swing votes.
But haven't we learned yet that with Clinton and with George W. Bush and even with Obama to a certain extent, that people are more interested in voting for someone that they can kind of relate to rather than somebody who's, you know, excellent at the job but kind of boring?
So you're saying we all text photos of our penises?
Yeah, I think everybody
I tried to get that going
photos.
Today, by the way, and it didn't really, you know, it was just you and me and Todd the Corpse who just put up a picture of a cashew.
You know, I think the best thing that the Democrats could do right now is if Nancy Pelosi just flashed a boob.
Or her own penis,
yeah.
Frankly, which you know she's got.
And just said, here you go. What's the big deal?
If she doesn't have one, you know that Hillary Clinton's got a drawer full of them somewhere, you know.
Hell yeah.
Probably with their owner still twitching in a closet, so.
Interesting little factoid there, too. While Wiener was texting his lady friends and doing all this stuff because his wife was out of town, on many of those occasions, she was out of town with Hillary Clinton.
Really?
Yeah, her job is to be, I think they call her a body woman, something like that. She's accompanies Hillary Clinton on diplomatic missions abroad.
Well, you know that. Bill Clinton was the groomsman at Wiener's wedding. Yeah. So you know, I mean, that's a heck of a shindig to be at, I would imagine.
Oh
so.
Yeah, the bachelor party must have been awesome.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now this is just like on the back of the jive about Sam Adams, you know, and Bo Breedlove. You know, don't care. Fix the pothole in front of my house.
Yeah.
Don't care. Don't care who you're sticking it to. How you're sticking it, where you're sticking, if, you know, unless there is a provable crime, which in the case of Sam Adams, there was not, I don't care. Doesn't matter. In fact, I will, you know what? I'll get you, whores. I'll get you, doesn't matter. Gay, straight, black, white, Jew, Gentile. You tell me what you want, I'll have it delivered.
Fix that pothole, I will get you a whore.
Fix the goddamn economy, and I will bring you all the sluts you could ever want. I think we ought to put a bounty on it, like to tell Obama.
I think the sluts would just volunteer if we fixed the economy.
No, seriously.
Sluts have to buy bread and milk and gasoline, too.
No, hoes gotta eat, Don.
Yeah.
Hoes gotta eat. Just tell Obama, like, look, you get unemployment down below 5%, like, I will bring you a busload of just, like, the hottest chicks dressed doesn't matter. You want them dressed as nuns? You want them dressed as actual point-of-fact penguins? That's fine. I don't care. I'm not going to judge. You just fix the goddamn economy. Yes, holes for holes. Thank you, sir. That's exactly what you'll call it. You fix the road in front of my house, I bring you some skags, and then everybody's happy.
Nice.
So, there you go. That's Rick Emerson making that promise, by the way.
I'm trying to remember where. Oh, yes. Police say a 21-year-old drunken driver in Connecticut punched himself in the face, tore his shirt, and threw his wallet and keys in a river in an attempt to convince police he had been assaulted. David Vagnini of the New Britain area of Hartford, I believe it is, Connecticut.
So let me understand this. So it's not. We actually did have a place that is just called New Britain.
Well, actually, I believe he was on New Britain Avenue.
Okay.
So he was in the New Britain, like, neighborhood.
All right.
But it was around midnight on Saturday. He nearly crashed into a car that had already entered the intersection. Police said they found his car and then heard Vagnini in the woods. As police searched for him, he called 911 to report that he was lost in the woods. He was found later down by the river. He told police he had been drinking in Hartford and was physically assaulted as he got into his car to go home. The beating had caused him to black out, he said. When he regained consciousness, he was in the woods, his clothes were torn, and his wallet, keys, and ring were missing. But then eventually Vagnini admitted that he had punched himself in the face, causing minor facial injuries. He'd also torn his shirt and tossed his stuff into the river to bolster his story.
I mean, this is to cover up what?
To cover reckless driving and crashing into a car.
I see.
And right. Being drunk.
Okay.
So, yeah, so...
Punching yourself in the face is a dumb idea. It doesn't seem like that's... How hard could it be to find somebody to punch you?
Well, if you're all alone and you just smashed into a car and you're fleeing into the woods and going to pretend that you blacked out and you were all alone, then I guess there's...
You don't have time to go rustle up hobos to punch you or something.
He could have run face first into a tree. It might have been more effective than punching himself.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to work.
I suppose if you had enough to drink, you could punch yourself effectively in the face.
I guess anything probably seems like a good idea if you're plastered, you know?
Yeah.
And also you've just wrecked your car. Maybe your powers of cognition are not as sharp as they might ideally be.
No. The Burnside Bridge will be closed Saturday from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the Grand Floral Parade. Tri-Mess bus lines 12, 19, and 20 will be detoured across the Steel Bridge while the Burnside Bridge is closed. Alternate river crossings while the Burnside Bridge closed include the Broadway, Hawthorne, and Morrison Bridges. The Rose Festival Fleet also makes its annual return to Portland's downtown waterfront this week.
Let me understand this. So they're closing like one of the bridges that actually doesn't have to lift for the goddamn boats.
Yes.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
The ships will arrive Wednesday and Thursday afternoon before the evening commute. The fleet will dock between the Steel and Hawthorne bridges. So, city prostitutes, be on alert. The fleet arrives.
Don't be giving away the hose that I've already promised to our elected leaders.
The hose, I think I have already got this written in ink in their schedule books.
It's a recurring action item.
Yes.
They've got a yearly reminder.
The fleet comes to town. The sailors swim upstream to wherever the hookers are. They spawn, and then they go back from whence they came. Most ships are scheduled to depart Portland on Sunday and Monday before and after the morning commute. Several downtown bridges, including the Broadway, Burnside, Morrison, and Steel, will need to open for ship arrivals and departures.
Hey, has anybody ever done, and by anybody I mean the Willamette Week, I'm looking at you, W Week folk. Has anybody ever done a whole, you know, like, chart of, like, I don't know, like Portland birth rates or whatever, like 9 months after Fleet Week?
I don't know.
Why not? That seems like an obvious story. I'd buy that. I mean, I would totally read that if that was an article. I mean, here's the thing about Rick Emerson. He has his finger on the national pulse, on the cultural zeitgeist. Wouldn't you read, if you walked by and you saw the Willamette sitting there, and they say, like, hey, we're gonna track the rates of childbirth in Portland throughout the year, but then specifically contrasting the rest of the year with 9 months after Fleet Week. Wouldn't you want to read that?
Yes, I would.
Okay, see, there you go. That's an article that people would like to read.
I would also be interested in seeing how much money gets dropped into
Planned Parenthood, the local
sex trade economy, and if we have a rise of communicable diseases.
Well, I was also going to say, just, you know, at the baby sucking place, you know, if there's a spike in chicks going there, you know, a few weeks later.
Now, on the more wholesome side of it, both of my sister-in-laws, Patrick's sisters, met their husbands because of Fleet Week. The one sister did one of those sort of set yourself up to go on a date with a guy who's in port for 2 days kind of a thing, which I guess you can do.
Is there an app for that? How do you do that?
Well, at the time, this was like 10 years ago, so I don't think there was an app for it.
I guess
there's something you can sign up for that you get, can show a sailor around town or something. I don't know. Well, I don't have.
There's something you can sign up for. It's just called standing out there.
But anyway, she signed up for this thing. She met this guy. They went out. They actually liked each other. They kept dating for like a year. A year later, they're back here in Portland again. He hooks up the other sister with a buddy of his from the ship. Both of these sisters ended up marrying these guys.
Yeah, somebody says that. Somebody writes, that doesn't sound slutty at all, Don.
Oh, I didn't say it wasn't slutty, but it did end up in marriage and children.
But,
so, you know.
But again, I'm back.
Good Christian value.
I'm back on the thing of where you sign up for this. Is there just like a clipboard they pass around?
Well, I never did it, so I don't really
know. Was it a dating service?
I think it was. I don't think it had to be like a girl. I don't think it was necessarily a dating thing. There was, and it probably still exists, this thing of when the servicemen come to town, you can volunteer to like show them the sights.
Okay.
As if it if You know what I mean?
Let me just cut right to the chase here. You have only... This is your... What relatives are these?
These are Patrick's sisters.
Patrick's sisters. You have only their word to go on that this service exists, right?
Well, sure. They could have just been hanging out on the dock, but, you know... They could have just made
shatter
the story
anybody's
up.
Illusions about their family, but...
They don't seem like dock-hanging kind of gals, but it could have happened.
Those are the ones who always are.
Yeah.
No, the girls who seem like dock-hanging gals are not hanging out of the dock. The sailors know where to find those girls. Girls who seem like they're going to hang out... Everybody knows where to go to find those girls, whether the sailors are here or not. I could probably go find some of those girls, like, right now.
Oh, yeah.
The girls you always see hanging down by the dock are the girls who don't typically do this kind of thing. Just trust me on this.
All right. All right.
Here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Somebody said, why are you grilling Dawn as though she did it? Because I secretly believe the stories about her.
I have lots of slutty stories, don't get me wrong, but none of them involve docks and sailors.
What are we doing here?
Science.
Here's your science news brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squiresElectric. You can also call them if you want. It's 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. That means they can come to your home, they can come to your place of business. And, you know, and somebody said, I got an email the other day. Somebody said, I'm not a business owner. And it was, I don't know what they were talking about, like, I don't know, like the company break room or the kitchen or something where it's, you walk in, it's like the thing of like 75, plugs all going into the one outlet where there's the weird extender plugged into another extender plugged into like one of those things that must be illegal that my dad seemed to have dozens of where it was like some sort of an adapter that made a three-prong plug into a two-prong plug, which I can't imagine is a thing that they actually can sell you now legally, like above board at the store. But there's a whole bunch of those. And he's like, well, who do I tell about that? And I really probably, honestly, sir, the police. But I mean, if you're not going to, or who the man, you know, in some, whoever it is that handles those sort of things. But if you're not going to do that, if you want to take a more a charitable approach, a more flexible stance on these things, you might contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They can come on out. And here's the thing, if it's your business or if you work there and you want to make sure that it gets taken care of, they can also make sure that you're not going to pay more than is bearable for you or the business or for your home or whatever, because they can give you a free estimate up top so you know about what you're going to pay. So you find out more at squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, literally all the way down to like the doorbell or to that thing that like heats up the panels in your bathroom, like heats up the floor or whatever. They can do all that. 503-252-1609, Squires Electric. Here's Dawn Taylor.
I'm going to start with some adorable science news. An 18-day-old pygmy hippopotamus made his public debut at the Bratislava Zoo in Slovakia last week. His mother is 29-year-old Dina, and his father is 4-year-old Paul. That sounds kind of creepy. Well, they're hippos. While they may look cute, pygmy hippopotamuses are known to be aggressive, especially in protecting their home. And although they are called pygmy hippopotamuses, the animals are far from tiny, generally weighing between 350 and 550 pounds and standing about 2 feet tall. And there's a picture of the baby hippopotamus.
So I'm going to be loading that right now. So you'll be able to see that at rickemerson.com/pictures/visual aids for June 7th.
Pygmy hippos are distinct from their larger cousin, the Nile hippopotamus, in that they're smaller, have eyes on the sides of their head, and their nostrils sit lower on their snouts. In general, the pygmy is more pig-like in shape and proportion, according to the National Zoo. While Nile hippopotamuses roam most of Africa, the pygmy hippo is native to West Africa and almost entirely confined to Liberia and a few surrounding countries. Not much is known about the species except through observations of them in captivity. As of 2004, 180 pygmy hippos lived in zoos and breeding programs around the world. And thankfully, pygmy hippos are known to breed well in captivity. An international mission will chart the saltiness of the ocean from outer space. An Argentine-built spacecraft carrying instruments from the United States and other nations is sent to launch Thursday from the Vandenberg Air Force Base along the Central California coast. The craft will circle 408 miles above the Earth and will use a NASA-built instrument to map weekly changes in the levels of brine in the sea. NASA's Aquarius instrument is so sensitive, it can detect changes down to a dash of salt in a gallon of water. Nearly three-quarters of Earth's surface is covered in water, which contains about 3.5% salt. Although the amount of salt in the world's oceans remains mostly unchanged, the brine concentration in the topmost layer varies around the world. Understanding how brackish the sea surface is will help researchers better predict future climate change and short-term climate phenomena such as El Nino and its alter ego La Nina, which have profound effects on weather around the world.
So I'm looking at this picture of the pygmy hippos or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I'm unclear. Are these both pygmy hippos or is one of them not? Is one of them a child?
I think one is the mom and one is the baby. The one on the left is the baby.
And so they're how big? Because the thing is, there's no sense of scale here.
No, the bigger one should be probably about 2 feet tall and weigh about 350 pounds.
Okay,
and the
see.
The other one's smaller.
Yeah, see, I guess I would have thought it was much larger than that because what they needed, you need an object of fixed size. Like a
garden gnome.
Or Bobby Roberts.
Yeah.
Just sort of there, just so you can get a sense of the scale of it. Okay, those are kind of adorable. Mm-hmm. Still not quite small enough to have, like, around the house, though.
No.
Maybe like one you could keep in a teacup, though. I'd be all over that.
No, they're kind of like those potbelly pigs that you get them when they're babies, and they seem adorable, and then they just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and you're like, crap, I have a 300-pound thing living in my house. So... As gas prices climb over $4 a gallon and sales of full-size SUVs continue to decline, the American auto industry is shifting its focus and looking to capitalize on a fundamental shift in the mindset of consumers who are buying smaller, more fuel-efficient cars. Looking to appeal to this demographic, Ford is gearing up to launch its smallest capacity engine, and it has less cylinders than any engine they've ever produced.
Here's a little suggestion from me to you. I want you to try a Costanza thing from now on.
What?
Whenever you want to say less, just say fewer.
It says here.
I know,
when
but
did I say less?
Just now.
It has less cylinders.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Okay, you're right. That is wrong. It has fewer cylinders.
Don't trust what other people say. Don't trust the outside world,
Don. Right.
That's filled with thieves and rubes.
Well, the person who wrote this story at the Discovery Channel or wherever, the new 3-cylinder 1.0-liter EcoBoost will be introduced in all small Ford cars and will have an offset crankshaft for improved fuel economy. To lower exhaust gas temperatures and drop weight, the new engine has split cooling systems that allow the cylinder block to warm up before the cylinder head. As well, the exhaust manifold is cast directly into the cylinder head. The EcoBoost engine was first unveiled at the 2010 Beijing Auto Show in a Ford Start concept car. This year, it was featured in the Ford B-Max at the 2011 Geneva Motor Show.
A B-Max totally sounds like a candy bar of some kind. But it would be like it would have twice the peanut butter of any extant candy bar.
Or some kind of a vitamin pill.
Or a hip-hopper.
B-Max. He's friends with Little MC.
Yes.
And B-Max.
With who?
Little MC.
And that... You're just bluffing. That's not the name of an actual rapper, is it?
No.
Okay.
No, there's a guy named Lil C who's a choreographer and a hip-hop dancer guy.
Okay.
But I don't think there's anybody named Lil MC. There should be, though. The pristine state of unpolluted waterways may be their downfall, according to research results published in a paper this week. A species of freshwater algae that lives in streams and rivers called Didymo, for Didymosphenia geminata, is able to colonize and dominate the bottoms of some of the world's cleanest waterways, precisely because they are so clear. Didymo does so with a little help from bacteria, which allow it to make use of nutrients like phosphorus. Blooms of Didymo, which is also known as rock snot, says scientist P.V. Sundareshwar.
I don't believe it's actually known as that.
P.V. Sundareshwar of the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology.
I think he just wanted to see if somebody would print that.
Are made up of stalks that form a thick mats on the beds of oligotrophic or low-nutrient streams and waters. He said, in recent decades, human activities have led to many uncommon environmental phenomena. Now we have Didymo.
Didymo is my Cuban blues name. Didymo Slim, actually. But
Didymo Slim and Rocksnot.
Yes.
That's him and his band. So. And finally, a Buddhist shrine at the Petroglyph National Monument in Albuquerque is attracting unwanted attention for the National Park Service. Critics say the Park Service refuses to make a decision about the religious monument, despite clear direction on the issue from the U.S. Constitution. The controversy began last August when dirt mounds appeared near the Buddhist stupa located at Petroglyph National Monument. That prompted Buddhists to fear the Park Service was preparing to tear down the shrine. They launched a national email campaign encouraging fellow Buddhists to come and protect the stupa. It turned out, however, the dirt was for an amphitheater the park was building at the visitor center. The national advocacy group from Washington, D.C. called Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility heard about this, sent a letter in October, asked for an explanation. Their executive director said, as we understand the Constitution, the government is not supposed to be involved in the establishment of religion, so our National Park Service owns a Buddhist stupa and we have no idea why on earth that passes legal muster. The director of the National Park Service, Jonathan Jarvis, called on his subordinates to make reassuring statements to the public, but remained silent on the Buddhist temple's future, according to Park Service emails. Anyway, it's located about 50 yards from the Petroglyph Visitor Center. And when they bought the two-acre property in 1996, it also came with a home, a Tibetan prayer wheel, a sweat lodge, and a swimming pool. The previous owner removed everything but the temple.
The thing that Buddhists have really going in their favor right here is that you'd feel like a real dick just going in and just raising the whole thing.
Yeah.
It'd be like rustling out the Amish. You know, you just, like, you know, like, you know, you probably should, but, you know, you feel like a jerk doing it.
And, you know, and really, and then again, too, if you want to be a jerk, you can just go, what are they going to do? Fight me?
No, seriously, that's the other thing. Also, that's about the Amish, though. The Amish will beat your ass. You always want to pick on Buddhists, you know.
Yeah.
But not the kung fu kind.
They'll brain you with a wagon wheel.
That's right, exactly.
Okay.
Is that the end of science?
Oh, heaven, yes.
All right, there you go. There's your Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. 503-252-1609. Then we got coming up next hour, we have a Geek Watch and a Taser Watch. And it's coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Geek Watch and Taser Watch at RickEmersonShow.com. Or you can listen for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. Still to come this hour, your entertainment news, ladies and gentlefolk. You can also get this program later on the day via iTunes if you like, or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at LegionOfNews.com.
More than 2,500 firefighters are struggling today to gain an advantage over the fast-moving wildfire that's already burned across 365 square miles of mountainous eastern Arizona. As of this afternoon, only four structures had been lost in the fire. When it became known that the Wallow Fire, as it's called, was producing dense plumes of smoke that were visible from space and thick enough to reduce visibility to less than a mile in some places, the National Weather Service said an air quality alert was issued. Authorities ordered the evacuations of the Arizona cities Greer and Sunrise yesterday. They also ordered residents of Eager and Springerville to be prepared to evacuate. New Mexico officials issued a similar warning for the town of Luna. The Arizona blaze is beginning to threaten neighboring New Mexico, and spillover smoke pushed by high winds has disrupted flights and prompted an air quality alert on the other side of the border. More than 2,700 people were affected by mandatory evacuation orders. General Motors is conducting its first stockholders meeting since emerging from bankruptcy as a brand new company. CEO Dan Akerson says they were on the brink until the government bailout came along.
General Motors almost made history by not making any future histories.
I'm sorry, I dozed off while he was talking.
Yeah, seriously.
Stock in the original GM was wiped out in a government-assisted bankruptcy, but Akerson says things are working out.
As perverse as it may sound,
we took all your money.
Bankruptcy, as difficult as it was, may have been not only a second chance, but a rebirth of a great 21st century global manufacturing company.
Okay. Sounds like he's in the Star Chamber or something.
And now we can get into debt again and get bailed out again.
I'm unclear.
It's a glorious country.
About the whole thing, if you had GM stock, what happened to it? I don't really understand, and I haven't been able to find anybody to explain that to me. Because they were owned by the government, and I guess maybe they're not now. I don't really know how that works. But if you had GM stock, like if it was just suddenly worthless because it was like the government owned everything. I guess maybe the government paid out the dividends or something. That's probably a thing that somebody's already told me, and I didn't retain the information for whatever reason. But I'm unclear about how that worked, because there was a thing where the government just came in and, like, the government was the majority shareholder of GM. So I don't know how that, because they were a private company, I think. So I'm unsure about how that all works. Well, in any event. Mm-hmm.
Firefighters in Moon Run, Pennsylvania, had to rescue a woman after her hand got stuck in an automated teller machine on Monday. The woman said she was getting cash out of the First Commonwealth machine in Robinson, Pennsylvania, when the incident happened. Rescuers said they had to use a special piece of equipment to free the woman. Fire Chief Paul Cashmer said it's the second time in less than a year that his firefighters had to use special tools to save someone from an ATM. In December, firefighters rescued a toddler who crawled up inside of a toy machine at Robinson Mall. First Commonwealth Bank released a statement saying, as a community bank, First Commonwealth's primary concern is to provide a safe, convenient banking experience for our clients. We understand that the recent injury was a minor one, and we're grateful that our client is okay.
I don't understand how her hand got stuck in it. What did it get stuck?
I have no idea.
Is it that little? Is it like one of those ATMs where it's like you got to lift up the little plastic window and reach inside to get your money?
Maybe. Maybe she reached in too far. Maybe so that she grabbed some extra.
Because it's like the one that, like at Chase now, they got where it's like the little tiny slot, like a CD slot, and the you know, and they put the money up. But then there's those ones where it goes, and it all falls down into a tray, and then you got to lift up the door and reach your hand. Inside.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to figure out what else there could possibly be into which, I mean, unless you were like a Lilliputian, what your hand could become stuck. Somebody says, maybe she got her hand stuck in the other kind of ATM. I don't like the imagery, sir. Rick Emerson doesn't appreciate that at all.
I'm sorry, the hamster wheels in my head are spinning while I'm trying to figure out what that means.
Oh, there are many people who know exactly what that means. And here's the thing, I don't even know how the hand comes into... unless it's a question of just leverage and trying to unstick everything. Doesn't matter. You don't want to know.
No, apparently not.
No.
Okay.
Except that you never do it. Never do it.
I won't.
No, you don't. You shouldn't ever.
No.
No.
A 67-year-old Kung Fu grandmaster has been indicted on charges that he sexually abused girls during their lessons at a suburban New York karate school. The Westchester County District Attorney says Frank DeMaria of Ossining, New York, was arraigned Monday on charges of sexual abuse, sexual conduct against children, and endangering children. He pleaded not guilty. The district attorney said four girls have complained. Some investigators said that DeMaria instructed them to touch his... Some told investigators that DeMaria instructed them to touch his genitals during lessons at his school. His lawyer, Andrew Quinn, said DeMaria teaches street fighting moves. He said students and parents sign waivers about physical contact.
It seems like these are exactly the wrong kind of chicks that you want to be groping, because at some point, the pupil will become the teacher, and if then they realize that, maybe you've been getting your feel on when you shouldn't have, then they're just going to break your spine.
Also, he's a 67-year-old Kung Fu grandmaster. I mean...
Are you saying he's earned the right?
I think he has earned the right to
That's Don Taylor saying that, by the way. Rick Emerson is not saying that.
Although I'm exactly wondering what move it is you're teaching them that involves them, touching your genitals.
It's the Jimmy Squeeze.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's the...
That's not its Asian name. That's it's a rough translation.
We call this Weasel on Fire,
Weasel on Fire. Weasel on Fire is something else altogether. I think it's where your doctor needs to touch it. Maybe put a small, thin camera inside.
The House of Representatives just...
Weasel on Fire. All morning, burn like hell.
Oh, yes. I have herb for that. Yeah. Yes. The House of Representatives just put President Obama on notice about the war in Libya, passing a resolution saying the president needs to consult Congress before continuing action there.
What's this called? Libya?
Yeah. This is Republican Jason Chaffetz.
I see, okay.
In acts of war, the president...
Let's all calm down a little bit, shall we?
Jason.
All right.
In acts of war, the president has a constitutional duty and obligation to come to the Congress to seek approval. For the president to suggest that he got approval from the United Nations is offensive and it's wrong.
Okay. Well, all right then.
A separate measure to pull out of Libya failed despite support from Democrats like Barney Frank.
It cannot be.
I love Barney Frank.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Touche Turtle.
It cannot be that America has to be the 911 for the world and that we are the ones who have to respond everywhere, every time.
It's like someone skulked into the night and stole all the cartilage from his face and ran away. And then he woke up the next morning, he was just, he's totally bereft of lips.
Aww.
You know what it's like? It's like you can see, you know what it is? It's like the poles go missing from your tent. You know, and it's like you've got all the canvas, there's nothing to support the structure. It's like the lips are there, they just can't actually be pinned into the appropriate shape to form the words correctly.
Do I have any pages on the printer, by the way?
Maybe.
Just take a little moment to check this out.
What do you think, if you had to guess?
I'd say yes.
You want to bet?
I'm wrong.
I'm just asking if you want to wager on it.
What do you want to wager?
If you're wrong, you have to do two push-ups.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
No. I don't want to bet on it.
No, you don't. No.
Okay,
no.
See? There you go. No. Gay and bisexual high school students are more likely than their heterosexual classmates to smoke, drink alcohol, and do other risky things, according to a government study released yesterday. Based on anonymous surveys of 156,000 high school students, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention study is the largest by the government to look at sexual orientation and behavior in teens. It echoes similar findings in some smaller studies. Investigators asked about dozens of risky behaviors, ranging from not wearing a bicycle helmet to drug use to attempting suicide. gay, lesbian, and bisexual students reported worse behavior in half to 90% of the risk categories. CDC officials don't know for sure why. The survey didn't ask kids why they smoked or attempted suicide or did other things that could be dangerous. But gay, lesbian, and bisexual students deal with stigma, disapproval, and social rejection. The study's lead author, Laura Kahn, said many risky behaviors are related to how people feel about themselves and the environment they're in. The surveys are from 2001 to 2009, and they found that, 3 to 6% of heterosexual students said they threw up or used laxatives to lose weight and stay thin. For gay and lesbian students, it was more like 13 to 20%.
Wait a minute. So what was the percentages there?
Straight students, 3 to 6% basically will engage in bulimic behaviors to, right, to control their weight, whereas for gay and lesbian students, it was between 13 and 20%.
That's odd. Okay.
You have to be fabulous.
Okay. I'm just wondering. I'm wondering if do they break this out by gender?
They probably do. It doesn't say so. It doesn't say here, but I'm sure the study itself does.
I'm just wondering if you were to break out the gay high school students by gender, and whether it was more gay male students or gay female students who were desperate to fit into those size zero jeans.
Yeah.
Like if that was hewing to one particular side of the gender line or another.
Probably.
Okay.
8 to 19% of straight students said they currently smoke cigarettes. 20 to 48% of gay and lesbian students said they smoked.
Well, let's be honest. It does look fabulous.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it makes you look righteous. There's just no doubt about that.
And 4 to 10% of straight students said they'd attempted suicide in the previous year. For gay and lesbian students, it was 15 to 34%. And for bisexual students, 21 to 32%.
So clearly the implication here is the gay and lesbian students are terrible at suicide.
Yes.
They just lack that skill set.
Yes.
We need.
And as for the things like the drinking and stuff, I mean, you know, I was a teenager and I needed to drink to get through it. And a man, if I was a gay teenager, I'd need to drink even more.
Seriously. Well, it really is amazing that I didn't come out of my teenage years with any number of substance abuse problems, because not just being a teenager, but I mean, especially if you're like a teenager in some tiny redneck town. It's like, seriously, what are you waking up every day for? You know, to learn? No.
Of course you're smoking cigarettes. You need all the joy you can get.
Just sitting there in like a basement covered with fake wood paneling and just going, ugh, you're right, you know, and just, you know, you like a, and you know, it's like your entire family is, you know, made up of just like extended cast members of, you know, like, you know, of Green Acres and, you know, Hee Haw. And you're just wondering, like, what?
There's nothing to eat except for Triscuits and Miracle Whip.
Now, don't knock Triscuits or Miracle Whip. But I'm just saying the rest of that scenario is not, you know, it's not precisely what you have in mind for yourself when you're a teenager. And then, of course, the worst part is when you hit, like, the age of reason and you realize, like, I don't know, you got, like, another 17 years of that ahead of you. And you just think, well, Christ, you know, this isn't going to get any better anytime soon. What's the point? All right, and so forth. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do some entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday, right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm.
According to the Guardian newspaper, officials in Lebanon have banned Lady Gaga's Born This Way, describing it as offensive to Christianity. The Office of General Security reportedly impounded copies of the chart-topping album when it arrived at the airport in Beirut. Officials told The Guardian, distributors are prohibited from circulating media that diverges from public decency and morality or is at odds with nationalistic or religious beliefs. Despite the report, Lebanon's information ministry insists that it is and always has been against all forms of censorship. The Los Angeles Times reported that the Lebanese Office of General Security confirmed copies of the album are still in our offices. We are still deciding what to do with them.
Okay.
Wesley Snipes, who started a 3-year jail sentence in December for failing to file income tax returns, had his latest court appeal denied on Monday. Snipes asserts that he is innocent and was tricked by tax advisors. CNN reports that Snipes, who starred with John Cheadle in the crime film Brooklyn's Finest, must serve out the rest of his sentence. Grammy winner Lauryn Hill is pregnant with her 6th child. Hill told the news on Saturday that at the end of shared the news on Saturday at the end of her Detroit concert. "I'm going to be taking off to give birth," said the 36-year-old.
Who impregnates Lauryn Hill, honestly? I mean, a space alien would be the obvious answer.
Bob Marley's son, Rohan Marley.
Do we know that it's Bob Marley's son?
Yes.
Or are you just making the assumption?
No, it says her longtime companion is Rohan Marley, son of reggae icon Bob
Marley. I can't even fathom the amount of drugs that I would need to make that sort of thing palatable to me.
Well, it's Bob
doesn't
Marley's
she
son. Do you know how much pot that guy must smoke?
Well, it's not even that. I was going to say, doesn't she just look like she reeks? But here's the thing. Let's be honest. If you're just encircled by a haze of just weed smoke and just, you know, funk all the time.
And other reggae people.
Seriously. And you know, and if you're not all that keen on like, maybe washing out the inside of your hair, then, you know, who knows? Maybe it's a sort of olfactory shield. Yeah, the thing about Lauryn Hill is, I mean, it's like if you go back and read like those interviews, you know, like back when like the score came out and all that. The interviews with the other guys in the band, they all had this sort of masked like, well, we know she's crazy, but that's why we try not to spend too much time with her when we're not on stage, sort of vibe. Like if you go back and read between the lines, in a lot of those interviews, it seems like she was probably just like nuts from day one.
She was quite a good looking woman, although she now has on her sixth kid, so I don't
yeah
know how
I
that's all
well, and there was that whole thing where she was just off, I don't know, like living in a treehouse in Sri Lanka or something with like, you know, like a guru for like 3 or 4 years. Well, it's like Wyclef was busy like becoming the president of Haiti or something. So I mean, I think all the sane ambition in that group was on one particular side of the aisle.
Richie Sambora has finished rehab and will join Bon Jovi for the group's European section of their concert tour, according to TMZ. Sambora checked into rehab in April after suffering a sobriety relapse. Bon Jovi plays Croatia tomorrow. So if you're in Croatia...
If you're going to be in Zagreb and needed a place to hang and, you know, kick back.
On Monday, Fox announced that singer Nicole Scherzinger has replaced Cheryl Cole as a judge on the upcoming Fox talent program, The X Factor. Scherzinger joins fellow judges Simon Cowell, L.A. Reid, and Paula Abdul.
Now, why was Cheryl Cole fired? What was the deal with that? Because she's on the British version, I think.
Yeah.
And then there was a whole huge deal about him bringing over here, and was the American public going to respond to her? You know, because she was a British celebrity and wasn't really known in the States. But I mean, it doesn't. You know, it's not. I mean, it's not like you know, anybody was really thinking about Paula Abdul before she became a judge in American Idol.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like Randy Jackson was like a household name with any, or Simon Cowell himself for that matter, until he came over here and was established as one of the judges there. I don't know. I wonder if there was some sort of personal fallout or if it was a money issue maybe.
Yeah, I have no idea. Cole was fired like a couple of weeks ago, and I'm really, you know, obviously I don't know. I don't really keep up.
Is
with
Nicole Scherzinger, is she one of the Pussycat Dolls?
I believe so, yes.
All right.
Yes, she was.
All right.
So, where am I here? Oh, there we go.
you're apparently in Admiral Stockdale's head.
TLC has renewed Extreme Couponing for a second season.
That's not a show. You're making that up. Get out.
The show, which centers on...
You are lying. There's no show called Extreme Couponing. Because that would be retarded.
It centers on people who love to save by clipping coupons. And it's averaged 1.9 million viewers during its first
season.
You're
kidding me.
No. The TLC's general manager, Amy Winter, said in a statement, "Extreme Couponing has struck a chord with our viewers and sparked a passion in people who are looking for creative ways to save money. The series is creating even more super shoppers, and we are lining our shelves with their remarkable
Look,
stories."
Look, here's the thing. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm opposed to coupons. Not like I'm opposed to frugality. I say this as like one of the biggest cheapskates I know.
Oh, yeah.
There's no such thing as extreme couponing.
There is indeed. It says so right here. There's a whole TV show about it.
You're either taking the coupon to the store with you or you're not. There's nothing extreme about it. There are no
degrees. Extreme couponing.
There are no degrees. There's no gradient on which you judge taking the coupon to the store. You either leave it at home on the coffee table or you take it out of your purse and you go, that's 2 for 1 on the checks. It's nothing extreme. No, fine.
My couponing is extreme.
Okay. Cheryl concurred, but she said, yes, there is, and it is, in fact, retarded. So there you go.
Okay, Animation producer Stephen Paul Leva has spoken out against Steven Spielberg's reported efforts to persuade the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences to allow his film The Adventures of Tintin to compete for an Oscar in the Best Animated Picture category next year. In a commentary published in Sunday's Los Angeles Times, Leva, a former president of Chuck Jones Productions and a producer of Space Jam, argues performance capture is not animation. Defining animation as creating the illusion of life through frame-by-frame filmmaking, Leva argues that performance capture, by definition, captures a performance in real life by a live actor. In fact, he suggests performance capture is the opposite of animation, which he observes is not drawings that move and act, but rather movement and acting that is drawn. With performance capture, it's not the animator that is creating the movement and the acting, he notes, the live actors do. He said you then overlay an illustrative look that is nothing but a special effect.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that, but upon closer inspection of my feelings, I don't care.
Well, let's see if you have feelings about this. Dakota Fanning has graduated from high school.
Really?
Yes, she has.
Wait, but okay, that doesn't tell us what we need to know. Is she, in fact, 18?
She's still only 17.
God damn it. Seriously, look, I don't mean to sound creepy. I'm just saying, just in terms of just sheer in sheer chronology and perception, doesn't it seem like she's been 17 forever?
Well, I think it's because, like...
I mean, I feel old. I mean, it seems it seems like I have known her on the scene as an actress for, like, 15 years or something.
Well, so first she was a kid, and then she jumped from this whole, that Hound Dog movie where it was all shocking that she was, like, so young and playing, like, a rape victim and there was a graphic sex scene. And she went from that to, like, being in the Twilight movie.
And the Runaways.
And looking all grown up.
Yeah, like, the Runaways, she looks like she's, like, 25 or something.
Yeah.
It just seemed, I mean, you know, whatever, 17, 18, you know, it's, here's the thing. No matter what country I'm living in, she's not dating me anyway. So... It just, yeah, that's one of those things where it seems like, you're right, it's like she aged and then just stopped for a long time.
All right.
Well, she donned her cap and gown, received her diploma from North Hollywood's Campbell Hall Episcopal High School, where she was a cheerleader and this year's homecoming queen.
You know what she looks like? Again, I don't mean to be creepy. I forget the actress's name. She looks like a somewhat younger version, not that younger, but she looks like a somewhat younger version of that chick that ends up marrying Buck Swope in Boogie Nights.
Yes.
The blonde girl that ends up with Don Cheadle.
I can see that. Yes.
She totally looks like that. So that really does surprise me, only because in the Runaways, she looked so much older than that. Yeah. By the way, like 700 people sent me, and I haven't watched it yet, the trailer for the new Twilight film, which I guess came out yesterday, which is probably awful. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, not just the movie. I'm saying the trailer itself is probably awful, but everybody, like, on Earth sent it to me.
Now, the scary clown who lives under my bed, who, by the way, now has a Facebook page as well.
Oh, of course.
The scary clown who lives under Don Taylor's bed. Those are his first and last names. But the scary clown said on Twitter the other day, it's like, a little birdie told me that you like Twilight. Which is, like, first of all, creepy because I'm still being stalked by a guy on Twitter who calls himself Scary Clown.
Yeah, it's a guy on Twitter.
And B, he thinks I like Twilight. So obviously he doesn't know me.
So he's
well.
Not only a scary clown, he's a misinformed clown.
Exactly. He's not paying attention.
His mental profile of you is incorrect.
He needs, yeah.
Well, maybe he's also got your address wrong, too. That'd be good.
That's not really me.
Yeah.
It's somebody else. Yes. That's all I remember.
Maybe he's trying to stalk Don Cheadle.
That's right.
There you go. It all comes full circle. So who knows? All right, there you go. There's your entertainment news for Tuesday here at Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is next hour at rickemersonshow.com, and you can get this program, that is Legion of News, anytime, day or night, at iTunes or at cascadia.fm here as a direct MP3 download or at legionofnews.com. We got like 90 seconds left here.
Okay. Bank customers in Essex in Britain had to stand guard after a branch of Barclays Bank was left unlocked for almost 4 hours. Even the cashier's service area and the route to the vault were left open to passersby on Saturday afternoon. The blunder was only noticed when a customer went into the branch to withdraw cash and found no staff present. Customer Leslie Phillips and two other customers investigated further and discovered the entire bank in the Broadway section of Essex had been left unlocked. They raised the alarm shortly after 2 p.m. Police arrived around 3 p.m., but it was almost 6 before Barclays' own security staff turned up to secure the building. I don't know.
Just fell
I got
apart
nothing
there
else.
At the
I completely fell apart. The bank's
well
security
done.
Firm was called. They did not attend to make it secure until 6 p.m. They really had absolutely no idea why there was no one there at the bank. So,
That's great. That just never...
That story, nothing really paid off in that story, did it?
Never really got back on track with that.
I thought at some point it would tell me, like, why. I had scanned the beginning of the story, and at some point in the story, it will explain where the people were and why they weren't there.
Somebody just said it's like Dawn was buffering just now.
And then while I'm reading the story, I realize it's going nowhere.
62%. All right. Excellent. On that note, we bring down the curtain on it, and glad we were able to end on that. A note of efficiency
Woo-hoo!
And clarity for the audience.
Yay!
Another installment of Legion of News. Don't forget, you can get it later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson radio program is next at rickemersonshow.com. Today with Taser Watch, also a Geek Watch coming up. And it's all on the way. It's Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. We are coming to you live from the Emerson News Network studios, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening, and we will see you again tomorrow. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Tuesday, won't you?